Let's go. Should LSU get out of playing difficult season openers? I'm going to give you the take that won't excite a lot of you, but you need to hear. Let's go.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the dragon, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get devoured, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the dragon, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get devoured, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field.
Let's freaking go. It is not time for us to sulk in sadness, but grow off another season opening loss. But should LSU get rid of it
in the future?
I don't think so. I mean, look, we're going to be a better football team. I wanted to win the game. Our whole state wants to win the game. Everybody that follows LSU wants to win the football game. But we're going to be a better football team because of what happened. It would have been better if we won the game. Our margin now is a razor-thin margin when you lose a football game like this. But, you know, we're developing a football team, and this was important. I understand that. But we're going to be better. As a football team going into week two. We know a lot more about our football team. We know about, you know, what we need to do better as coaches. And as a development of a football team, I don't necessarily think the opener winning at 73-0 gives you much benefit. You know, you go into week two with a lot of questions about who you are.
All right. LSU should stop playing difficult season openers. And I understand, I have heard many great arguments as to why LSU should continue to keep playing difficult season openers, because LSU is LSU, and LSU is not the only team that plays difficult season openers, and we shouldn't keep losing these games. Well, the truth is, LSU is one of the only schools that over the past 5 years has played a difficult season opener each and every year, right? Ask South Carolina fans what they prefer. Last year, they played a difficult season opener versus North Carolina and got their asses handed to them. This year, they played even worse in a season opener, but they won because they were playing Old Dominion. Now, would they prefer to be 1-0 with the scrawny win over Old Dominion, or would they prefer to be 0-1 after getting their asses handed to them by the number 3 overall pick in the NFL draft? They prefer to be 1-0. Fans prefer to win. And we tend to think of college football like other sports. It is unlike any other sport. It is probably the most different sport than all the other sports that we truly care about in American society, because there is no preseason. There's absolutely no preseason. But with no preseason, college football season opening game matters more than any of the other sports combined, because we only play 12 games. Each and every loss is critical for your college football playoff chances, even in an expanded 12-team playoff, right? So this idea that all season openers and all games are created equal is nonsense, especially in the transfer portal era. So, yes, LSU is locked into playing Clemson in the season opener over the next 2 seasons. And no, they shouldn't duck out of it, because that looks absolutely cowardly to do. But obviously, we can't get ready to play. You can make a very strong case that in each of the last 3 seasons, yeah, we played really good teams. But at the same time, there was some hellacious coaching and organization for the season opening game. So we are in a difficult spot continuing to play these games. Now, I understand it is cowardly for me to say this, but the truth is, LSU is one of the few schools that plays a difficult season opener each and every week and each and every year. So tune-up games help, right? You can't deny that LSU beating down Georgia Southern did not help them go on the road and be the high old machine that they were in a 95-degree environment in Austin, Texas. Now, does Joe Burrow still find a way to win that game with Ja'Marr Chase and everyone else that played phenomenally in that game? They do, because they were that good of an all-time great team. But the truth is, playing a really, really, really easy season opening game helps you get comfortable as a team, right? Also, college football and just football in general, the practices are so drastically different than the games, right? It's not like that in baseball or basketball. Football games are so different. Guys are actually being tackled to the ground. You're actually going from playing in front of no one to screaming lunatics of 90,000 people, right? Get rid of playing difficult season openers, because we can't win them, right? I understand that that does not sound appetizing, but do it. Just do it. Don't play difficult season openers anymore, because starting 0-1 is very difficult to overcome. Okay. So we say hi to CT, JSB in the chat. There's JSB. We say hi to Mick. Mick, I did have a problem with one of your comments recently, where you were trying to dissuade a recruit from going to LSU. Come on, Mick, you're a little bit better than that, man. We want that guy coming to LSU. I won't say who. We say hi to Heath. I don't like the neutral site thing. Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about Vegas. I do want to apologize really quickly. I took a lot of photos in Vegas, and a lot of people emailed me those photos, and I said that I would put them in the film study. I just wasn't able to with my travel being the way that it was. So on the next film study, I will post everyone that I met. You know, it was awesome. It was awesome being in Vegas, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. I do want to start with that, though. Playing a difficult season opener in college football, you don't get any extra points for going out there and winning a difficult season open game, even though I think that you should. I have been the biggest proponent of giving teams like Georgia a lot of credit for scheduling difficult season openers versus Clemson and Oregon and so on and so on. They deserve credit. Florida deserves credit, even though it is the second consecutive year they're gotten their asses kicked in a difficult season opening game. It makes college football better that we have marquee season opening matchups. It also helps out LSU, even though they've lost all three of these Sunday night games. 9.2 million people watch that game. It is the only game on that Labor Day weekend on that Sunday night. So there's some brand equity in that, even though you lost the game. So look, that I don't like playing difficult season openers. I don't. All those things are great, but starting 0-1 every year is not. So there you go. It's out of Sherry. Barry, CT says you get extra as far as credit to the playoff, though. No, you don't. That is just a lie. That is a mythology. It is not true at all, okay? The only thing that matters for you to get into the college football playoff is not losing, okay? Losing gets you out of the playoff. College football is the only sport where we focus more on your losses than who you beat. Seriously. All that matters is, did you lose? No one cares who you beat. Every college football playoff debate starts with, how many losses do you have? I'm serious. Go look at any college football playoff debate. Okay? So, yes, I would like to think that. But the truth is, you should get credit for scheduling difficult season openers. But you don't. You don't. Okay? You don't. Everybody, welcome Scotty to the channel. Good to see you. Lovely dog. All right? Once again, Super Chat is wide open. This is going to be a very fun live stream, okay? We went 2 hours after the game, but that 2 hours was after me surviving the Planet of the Freaking Apes leaving Allegiant Stadium. That was absolutely insane. Watch my dad almost get trampled. Watch 5-6-year-old people jump barricades, one eating asphalt. That was absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. Ubers, all that stuff, insane. Now, enough of that. Enough of that. Let's get into the matter at hand, which was the game. I kind of want to turn the page. I felt the Brian Kelly press conference was very open, very honest. I want to talk about Kyren Lacy and the usage. And I was just on Blake's show. I told Blake to come on my channel as well. It is a little bit different because I normally do the Monday night show. But I went on with Tuesday night. So, you know, I disagree a little bit. And we got into it about the Kyren Lacy stuff. Look, Kyren was seriously doubled, the way I saw it, quite a few times. Should LSU have found more creative ways of getting him the football in the second half? Yes, but keep this in mind, all right? And I want people to really focus in on this Garrett Nussmeier play to Aaron Anderson, right? So a lot of you remember it was 3rd and 6, game on the line. They doubled Kyren Lacy, and eventually Garrett Nussmeier was able to find Aaron Anderson deep. And, you know, maybe a faster player there scores. You know, if that's Xavion Thomas, does he score? If that's Chris Hilton catching that ball, does he score? If that's Kyle Parker, who I think all three of those guys are faster than Xavion Thomas, does he score? Maybe he does. You know, that was such an amazing throw by Garrett Nussmeier. And if you're telling me that Kyren Lacy being doubled means that guys are running wide open down the field with the game on the line, I'm taking that each and every week. And what I don't want to happen, and this is something and look, I'll just play the clip for you here from Brian Kelly. Where was it? Let me see. I track of my note. What's this? I know it was early. Okay, here we go. I want to talk a little bit about this Brian Kelly press conference from earlier today. I want to play this clip really quickly. This might not be the exact one. Once again, it's been an absolutely insane day. Let's get to this one.
You know, Kyren Lacy is arguably our best offensive player, and he didn't get a touch. So, I mean, I think that that's clearly something that, you know, Joe and I talked about, and he understands that. He's a smart guy. I mean, we need to get our best players the ball when it means the most. And so, you know, we've got to be better there in making sure that our players get the ball. And if that means pushing it down the field, we got to push it down the field too.
Okay. So I push back pretty heavily on this. All right. Game on the line, they tried to get Kyren Lacy the ball. They had him doubled. It was a 3rd and 8 play. They had him doubled. They tried to get Mason Taylor to pick his guy, and they just covered Kyren Lacy. It was just a really good defensive play. And then game on the line, they tried to get the football to Kyren Lacy. They doubled him again. Garrett tried to throw it, and by doubling him, it had Aaron Anderson wide open. We want that. If you're going to put a lot of coverage on Kyren Lacy, which leads to wide open spaces for other guys to catch it, we want that. It's kind of like the Steph Curry debate, right? If Steph Curry is getting doubled and tripled and ran off the three-point line, what does that mean? Well, the pick and roll slip to Draymond Green's going to be wide open. Klay's going to be open in the corner. Harrison Barnes is going to be open. Sean Livingston's going to be open for a mid-range. So if that's the case, we want that. And when you look at the best offenses in college football history, they never, and I mean never, base their offenses around force-feeding somebody the football, right? Take last year's offense. Were there instances where, you know, they said, we're getting Malik Nabers some football with the game on the line? Sure. But what made the offense so great was Jayden Daniels went to the open guy, right? And that's where I am right now. There should never be a time where LSU should feel like force-feeding the football is what you need to do offensively. It's actually the opposite. If you want to double one of our really, really good players or our best player, let's go to another guy who has a more advantageous matchup. To me, the most descriptive play of LSU offense last season was the Kyren Lacy in-breaker touchdown versus Auburn, right? They put all the coverage on Malik Nabers on the slot fade, which was our most productive play last year, and that gave Kyren Lacy a one-on-one on the backside. So basically, if they're going to put a lot of emphasis on Kyren, do I think it's maybe in my film study, I overstated what they did defensively to Kyren in the second half? Sure, I was also cutting this thing at 3 a.m. in the middle of an airport, but they really did focus a lot on Kyren and forced other people to beat you. We need Garrett to connect with those other people, and he did with Aaron Anderson a few times, but there were instances where C.J. Daniels was open. And I know C.J. having 3 catches for 19 yards didn't really look all that great, but I thought C.J. Daniels did some really, really good things this weekend. Let's go to Rick right here. Carter, you were right on AYS. All the breaks went USC's way. Close game, we should have won. Trojans executed when it counted, and LSU didn't. Okay. So I was going to say this for a little bit later, but he did super chat. I was actually going to save this for after our break. So the way it works is, you know, now that we have a few partners here on PHL, by the way, we still have sponsorship spots open. We would love for you to join our business growing here on PHL. We were very lucky at halftime. One of our big partners in OPOD actually joined us on the halftime show in the chat. We'll actually have him on pretty soon. But here's what I think, okay? USC made more difficult plays to win this game, right? They did more difficult things than we did, right? What I mean by that is I felt their players did more extraordinary things where LSU didn't necessarily do a whole lot to lose a game. I don't think any individual player really played just awful for LSU, but there wasn't as many special plays made by LSU's players. Now, a lot of that has to do with play calling and so on and so on, but you would like for instance, one special play made by an LSU player was Ashton Stamps saving us 4 points, stripping that ball loose. There wasn't enough of that, though, throughout the night, right? Outside of Savion Jones and Whit Weeks, who both of them made quite a few special plays during the course of the game, okay? Offensively, obviously, Kyron Lacy made a bunch of special plays. Will Campbell had a lot of special blocks in this game. It wasn't his best game. The false start penalties were there. And Gary Nussmeier, I thought, was really good. You know, we got into a debate on Blake's show a little bit earlier. Should it have been an A? Should it have been a B? I would give Gary Nussmeier an A. You know, 88 QBR, obviously a guy that was not really under pressure. I felt he was jittery back there. I do think that he's got to trust his offensive line a little bit more. But at the same time, if you would have told Garrett, hey, you're not going to have Chris Hilton, the guy that replaces you, that replaces Chris Hilton, by the way, is also going to get hurt in the first drive of the game. By the way, you're not going to have a running game to work with. And by the way, they are going in all their power to force you to throw it to someone else other than Kyron Lacy. Then the fact that Garrett shot an 88 QBR is pretty phenomenal. So I would give him an A. It probably is closer to a B now that I think about it, but it's obviously very subjective. But I do think Garrett, all things considered, especially it being a first game, was really, really, really good. I felt Miller Moss was definitely a little bit more clutch. I felt like he made the more difficult throws than Nuss, but Nuss was really, really, really good. Now, I say all of that because Rick is right. Rick is right. USC had more lucky breaks go their way. The only thing, the only blatantly obvious lucky play, and only is probably hyperbole, but the chip shot field goal that USC missed at the end of the first half was the only real big lucky thing that went LSU's way. Were there a few others? Yes. Okay. But let's go back to the fake reverse. All right. They were reversing. They're trying to get the ball to Zachariah Branch. Greg Penn does a good job reading it. It was Greg Penn's best play. But if Greg Penn actually didn't make that play, it would have been stripped right into the hands of JVR Suggs. It's kind of a weird play to break down. You go to the film study and see it for yourself. That was lucky. There was a ball batted up directly in the air twice, and neither ended up being interceptions, okay? I know one of those was on fourth down, and you would have gotten the turnover anyway. But the truth is, the fact that those weren't picks were unfreaking believable pieces of luck, right? LSU was very unfortunate in spots during this game, okay? So, look, I don't think it was a huge factor as to why USC won, but dang, they had a lot of things run in their favor. Also, I go back to this. Was USC the better team on Sunday night? I believe that they were, but I do think it was slight. All the analytics show that this game was even. Total yards, yard per play. You know, EPA per play was somewhat similar. I know some people like EPA per play. You can go to Game on Paper and see those stats. Robert Binion does a really good job over there. But, you know, I felt overall USC was a slightly better team. And I think some of that was I felt USC's offensive play calling was better. And I felt USC's defensive play calling was better. I do. And one thing I think that really helped USC out in this game was they had a guy in Kamari Ramsey who knew the system, and he obviously made a lot of plays, number 7 for USC. And it seemed as if they had a better understanding of what D'Anton Lynn wanted to do, whereas LSU were just trying to figure things out, right? Brian Kelly talked about Harold Perkins playing a little bit more within the structure of Blake Baker's defense in today's press conference. So, you know, I thought defensively they executed a little bit better than we did. And I also felt that they were more physical than we did. One thing I would defend, though, as far as LSU in the trench battle, there were some instances where USC really bullied us. But some of that is because if I, as a defensive lineman, can key in on what I think you're going to do, then, well, I'm going to dominate you, right? It doesn't matter if you're going up against Emory Jones, who's going to be an NFL player, if you're going up against, you know, a backup, right? If I know what you're going to do, it makes my life a lot easier, okay? Now, one final thing on the play calling, and then we're going to get to more of your questions. Joe Sloan is under serious heat. This is a younger guy who doesn't have a whole lot of play calling experience at one of the top 10 schools to be a play caller, right? LSU is a place that a lot of OCs dream to be at. You dream of working with wide receivers that LSU has. You dream now of working with the offensive linemen and tight ends that LSU have, right? So Joe Sloan is under a lot of pressure. Cortez Hankton is under a lot of pressure. I felt during the game that there was maybe four or five play calls that I thought were just terrible. But there was one. There's only one that I would consider to be inexcusable. And if it happens again, you really have to seriously consider a man's play calling duties. It's the third and one run to John Emery to the left side. That was one of the worst play calls in LSU history. I know that that sounds like hyperbole, but it's not. Because you ran the same thing versus Georgia a few years ago in the 2022 SEC championship game, where guys were able to key in on what you were going to do. And I know that was Jalen Carter making a play on a true freshman, but this was basically the same thing. Kamarion Pimpton having to make the crucial block on the play going up against adults, right? Kamarion Pimpton's only a year two tight end who is still learning the tight end position. Pimpton actually had a good game overall blocking, but you're asking him to make a block that honestly George Kittle would have struggled with the guy keying in on the run to the left right there. That was such a bad play call. And I don't know if I can get over it. Like, I just don't know. I just didn't understand the logic behind it at all. I really didn't, other than John Emery has a hot hand. The one thing you never want to do as a play caller, and I know it's this old school mentality where, well, we just got to out-execute the guy in front of us. Out-executing is definitely a thing that you need to do, right? But I don't want to out-execute someone that knows what we're doing. You're making their life a lot easier. And I go back, and I was making this point at the end of last year. It felt like teams were able to really key in on our running game, and that was definitely the case this year as well. Now, there are a few things that I think LSU can do, one of which is very controversial, and it's kind of tough to install this this early in the season, but I think LSU should think about going under center. I really do think so, but that's something I don't think that they are going to do, so it's not worth fighting, okay? So there you go. James says, why didn't Garrett pull on that play? Few things, okay? Now, I say this because I do get a lot of compliments on my film study, and I really appreciate you guys' patience with that, right? That was the hardest film study I've ever had to do from an uploading point. I had to stop at seven different businesses yesterday in Texarkana, Texas, coming back from the game to find a Wi-Fi strong enough to upload an hour and a half film study that I cut in an airport. And I want to shout out Verizon in Texarkana, Texas. This is unpaid. I just want to say thanks to them for letting me use their Wi-Fi to upload it. You know, I appreciate the compliments on the film study. It is not for me to instruct the coaches on what to do. I'm just giving you my opinion. I did not coach at a high level. I did not play at a high level, obviously. These are my best educated guesses. And the one thing I felt I could do a better job on the film studies is sharing that we don't know the rules of every play call. So one thing we tend to think about too much is the play call itself. What we don't tend to think enough about is the individual rules that players have on certain plays. So, yes, you are right, James. If Garrett Nussmeier pulls it, he probably does have a chance to run that first down. The issue, though, is there probably wasn't a pull part of the play unless it was said in a press conference or post game that I didn't see. So, you know, yeah, in theory, Garrett could have pulled it and ran for a lot of yards. But also at the same time, we don't know if he would have had that option. Okay. So there you have it. Texarkana in the house. I want to shout out Donald. This was crazy. I got to meet Donald on the plane ride. We'll talk more about all the one-on-ones that I got to have this weekend. Okay. Bungalow Bill. All right, dude. All right. First off, we got to do something about this face, Bungalow Bill. You do not look like a Bungalow Bill. All right. You just don't. LSU was USC's cupcake. Laugh emoji. The second thing is you commented under my film study, a bunch of laugh emojis and stuff like that. Okay. I don't know what's going on in your life, or you have to troll an LSU fan base when, you know, we don't play you again. But what I would tell you, Bungalow Bill, is congrats. This is probably the highlight of your life, the highlight of your evening. But what I would tell you is go touch some grass and move on with your life. Under center would be something to watch. Okay. I'm going to block him. Bring back the big cat drill. Yeah, I appreciate it, James. But the film study is not meant to instruct the LSU players or the coaches what to do. Okay. I do give my thoughts on what I think they should do. But it was tough. It was tough. There was a lot of things that were tough to process. Now, next thing, we'll go to our first Venmo from Samuel. He says he's bummed. So Samuel, as many of you know, has become one of my best friends from this channel. He and I view life very similarly. He's obviously a very successful dentist. And I got to hang Samuel, not for as long as I want. I've gotten to know his brother really well. And his wife is unfreaking believably talented as well. So Samuel, I appreciate your friendship. Here's the issue, though. Okay. I want to let y'all know something about Samuel, because he did super chat. So he asked me to go to see the Chainsmokers at one of these Vegas pool parties. I've never been to one of these Vegas EDM pool parties, but the issue is I don't have Vegas pool party body, right? And I like Chainsmokers. I like EDM. The issue for me going to a pool party is you do not want to see me with my shirt off, right? I am hairy. Like, I'm so unfreaking believably hairy. And I have rolls. Like, I don't have, like, nasty rolls, but, like, it's weird. Like, my rolls look like abs, but in roll form, okay? My back is unbelievably hairy. My wife hates it. She has to live with it. I don't have Chainsmoker pool party body at all. Samuel does. He's ripped. He and all his friends are, like, ripped. I couldn't do it. I also didn't want to pay the $175 to get in. And then I don't want to get in there and everyone be like, oh, look, Carter the Power. I don't want the chain smokers to stop saying, oh, is that Carter the Power from Power Hour LSU? Oh, man. Let's get this dude an ace of spades. And then I get the bill for the ace of spades. I was afraid that was going to happen. And I didn't want to be the one that had to foot the bill for the ace of spades. Let's go to Carvis. Carvis is super chats, and he's like, hey, I have an actual super chat about football. And they're talking about Vegas pool parties. Let's go. This loss is on the coaches. It absolutely is. It absolutely is. We were the better team. If we have plays that go our way, this could be a special season. I want to see Hilton and Zy Alexander. Yeah, Zy Alexander now fully healthy. I'm a little shocked that there's not, you know, more info on that. But Ashton Stamps was phenomenal. I mean, there's no other way around it. He was phenomenal in this football game. PJ Woodland was really good too. Sage Ryan, here's a typical Sage Ryan game. He didn't do anything just awful, but he didn't make any plays either. Carvis, this loss is on the coaches. It really is. Like, I understand that that's easy to say. We'll go to Harry's super chat. I got to talk to Harry on the phone for a little bit earlier. And I'm kind of pissed at Harry. And I'll tell you why. Like, I really do have a problem with Harry. Like, a pretty big problem. Okay. And Samuel in his super chat, he follows up. He said, Carter, F this, you're chain smokers. Comes out to the coach, man. What's up with the players shooting USC players in the head? That was stupid by Kyron Lacy. I understand why he did it, and I know John Eads added extra context. But that was really dumb, and there was an injury on the following play that wouldn't have happened if Kyron didn't do that. So he shouldn't have done that, right? What's up with all the penalties? Yeah, penalties were an issue. These players are not coached well. Great coaches do not let that happen. So Samuel and Carvis with the Super Chats. So here we go. Let's talk about Brian Kelly's coaching, okay? This is another step in the wrong direction for him as a coach. That's partially why I led this show, because I don't know if I could trust Brian Kelly to win a season opener. I don't know if I can at this point. I would like to think that he does eventually. But one thing that all three of these games had in common were really, really poor coaching. Now, I understand season opener a few years ago, 2022, it's your absolute first game, and you weren't playing Emory Jones and Harold Perkins yet. I get it. I get that. And those two players can change the outcome of that game. But special teams wasn't together. You had snaps all over the place. It was a mess. And last year, our coaching withered. Okay, I've given Brian Kelly excuses for that, because that Florida State team was one of the best teams that LSU has ever played. So I'll give you leeway on that. Still, it was not a well-coached game. Then this game was also not well-coached at all. It wasn't. At least we were not blown out. So I give LSU a lot of credit there, but we were not well-schemed. We were not well put together. And the issue I have with that as well is South Carolina had a bunch of new coaches. I think Gio Paez was solid. I think some of these other transfers weren't as solid. Obviously, Jordan Gilbert had a really, really brutal game. But honestly, when it comes down to actual coaching, you know, one thing I gave Brian Kelly a lot of credit for when he was hired is, for the most part, he's been really good between the headsets during his time at Notre Dame. I don't think he's been that all that much at LSU. Now, there have been some games he's been really good between the headsets. Obviously, 2022 Bama was definitely, and it might be the best coach game of his career. But, man, if you're slamming the fists on the table, saying that the same things happen over and over again, then what's the constant? Well, it's you. You got to do a better job. And Brian Kelly has told you that repeatedly. One thing I think LSU needs to do a better job of, and this was a bit of an issue with last year's team as well, and it's a big reason why I think last year's team had some of the issues defensively, is I don't think I don't think the individual players defensively make a lot of the right decisions that you have to make on the field. Now, the reason why that makes me uncomfortable to bring up and talk about is because, well, it's one of those things where I'm not in the meeting room, right? I don't know what the rules are, the coverage rules of the defense, right? So it makes it hard to say, well, it should have been this guy or it should have been that guy. The one thing you saw the USC players do defensively, though, is there weren't as many guys like running into each other, right? There was a lot of that at LSU where in this game defensively, where guys were in the same space doing the same thing. And offensively, we were just really keyed in, right? I felt like there were some instances where some plays could have been made and we just didn't make them, right? So, like, I feel like individually, our players are a little bit behind, that they play sometimes a step too slow. And some of that I do think is coaching. Actually, a lot of it is coaching. So, you know, you see Brian Kelly slamming the table. I've always told you this. If Brian Kelly tells you something, more often than not, he's being pretty honest, right? He's overall not a coach speak coach. He does give you coach speak. Every coach gives you coach speak. But if you listen really closely, he'll tell you like it is. That's why I play, and I will moving forward, play so many clips from Brian Kelly's press conference. Sometimes I just play the whole thing, right? And shout out again to Tiger Bet. I use their footage, but LSU has it. Everyone has it. So, you know, coaching is an issue. It is an issue, okay? Not only in the micro, but in the macro, right? Like, you know, last year was and then I know we're talking about last year and we're turning the page, but last year was a chance for LSU to win the whole damn thing. Like, it's, I mean, You know, if LSU was in that playoff field with a decent defense, you know, they would have probably been three and a half point underdogs versus Michigan, who was the best team. But, you know, they would have had a shot. They would have had a shot. So it's tough. It's really, really, really tough to say if it's coaching or not coaching, okay? Let's go to Harry. I'm mad at Harry because Harry went to the game and didn't let me know. Okay? He did not let me know. And Harry's a patron. He's been one of our biggest supporters. So let's keep it going. Okay? Biggest takeaway. Kept him under 100 yards rushing. Yes. And look, I know in the film study there were some things where I said, man, why are we doing this defensively? Blake Baker was really good. You also have to keep this in mind. If you are looking at LSU, the starting defense was one of the lowest blue chip ratio defenses we have ever fielded, right? Like, think about that. Now, what is blue chip ratio? It's the amount of three-star or better players that are on your defense, okay? LSU is starting a lot of three stars, a lot. And I know that sounds concerning or put down. No, it's the opposite. It means that we're coaching guys up and we're also doing with what we have, right? And the four stars that are on defense are a lot of year four and year five guys. So guys that have not, you know, they weren't three and done type of players, right? You don't have a lot of the, you know, high end three and under type of guys. Outside of Harold Perkins, that's about it. Okay? So this was an LSU defense versus arguably the best play caller of this generation that held them to 27 points. You know, that was enough to win the game. It should have been enough to win the game. And that was Harry's point number two. Okay? Number three, Joe Sloan needs guidance and needs to grow. Okay. This is the issue with that. Okay? The third most important person in your entire program, the third most important person is your offensive play caller. The most important person in every college football program is your head coach. The second most important person is who your quarterback is for that year. And then the third most important person is your offensive play caller and fourth defensive play caller. And then it's the collective talent. Right, collective talent is actually number one, but we're talking about individuals. So, yes, Joe Sloan wasn't his best game. I also don't think it was just awful. I don't. But this is a top 10 offensive play caller job. This is a top 10 offensive play caller job. And there were some interesting offensive play callers that LSU could have gone and gotten. I do think, though, Joe Sloan would have been the decision that I would have made. Because oftentimes I put myself in the shoes of Brian Kelly, and I don't like to flip-flop after the fact, right? Part of why the Matt House stuff went so much in my favor and I gained subscribers was I never really budged off of Matt House in my take that I wouldn't have gone in that direction if I were Brian Kelly. Like, Matt House did a lot of good things. So you would think that I would change my opinion. I did. You know, the Alabama game was an all-time great game that he called in 2022. But after that, we fell apart, okay? So I'm not going to budge off of Joe Sloan being the right guy. But, you know, as far as a play caller is concerned, there are better ones in the SEC, a lot better ones. And last year, that was not the case with Mike Dimbrock, who, for the most part, was really good at LSU. So, you know, I think Joe Sloan obviously has done a better job recruiting quarterbacks with Bryce Underwood coming in. Wasn't his best game. Wasn't. And I still go back, like, what is the one play call that he wishes he could have back? There's probably a lot that he would tell you. The only play call that I would consider to be somewhat just, I'm not going to say that, but the only play call that I'll say you should seriously reconsider who's actually calling the plays was the third down run where Kamarion Pimpton blew the block. And I'm not defending Kamarion Pimpton. I'm just telling you that George freaking Kittle would have struggled to make that block. Okay. George Kittle would not have been able to make that block. I'll just say it. There's no way. It's hard. Now, you would have done a better job than Pimpton, and it might have been enough to gain a yard or so. But still. Okay. Appreciate it, Mike. He is a PHL. He got actually some more PHL shirts. Get yours today. PowerHourLSU.com. So I get another super chat here from Jordan. Blake Effin Baker. So, coming up after this, I'm going to give you a grade on Blake Baker. And I'm going to tell you why the USC loss could be a good thing. That's coming up right after this. Home is where the heart is. And our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. Book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's XYANImaging.com.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. All right, Jordan, I appreciate the super. Let's talk some Blake Baker. Really good game. Really good game. Overall, and once again, you can get all my grades. I grade every position group, patreon.com/football cards. No, it's my football card Patreon. Patreon.com/LSU football. He was really good. I really do think so. Were there some instances where we had guys in the wrong spot? Sure. But overall, Blake Baker, really good job. Another guy who deserves a lot of credit is Kevin Peoples, because Savion Jones looked like an NFL draft pick. And Kevin Peoples was really good. Bo Davis was really good. The defensive tackles held up. I am interested in where the secondary goes, how they're going to rotate that. So it's very interesting. It's very, very, very interesting. But Blake Baker, that's a really good super chat, Jordan. We really appreciate you. Marco says, as an SC fan, how we play the rest of the year will give you a measuring stick of where you're at. If we beat Michigan, you know you're on the right path. It's true. It's true. I'll tell you this, though. Do I think this USC team was as good as Florida State's team last year? No. Mm-mm. Do I think USC is really good? Yeah. This was the third consecutive year where when I did the film study of the team, I grew more into them potentially winning the game, right? And as I learned more about Kamari Ramsey and I learned more about the transfer from Wyoming, the DT, Bear Alexander, Anthony Lucas, and those guys, it was good. It was really good. you know, what if there was a rematch? I'd love a rematch. I'd love to see these two teams play again. And I also told you, Miller Moss, like, I don't think he's the best quarterback. I don't think he's a top five college football quarterback. But when it comes to making extremely difficult throws, I don't know if there's a better quarterback at doing that. Like, he makes some really high-level throws throughout the year. Patrick with the most insane comment I think I've ever heard. How good could that FSU team actually have been last year? The minute they lost their QB, they were, and nobody got smacked by UGA. I'm glad Georgia is not some unfreaking believably elite program. We had months to prepare for that game and had zero opt-outs. Florida State had 1,000 opt-outs. Okay. And also, memo to everyone watching, your team is not as good when you lose your starting quarterback. I know that sounds crazy. You know, unless you're Ohio State and you got Cardale Jones as your third stringer, you really, and I actually saw Cardale Jones. He was playing poker right next to me, actually, this weekend. Now, I want to address this. What's up, Layton? Good to see you. I've gotten a lot of tweets and follows from what I said about Whit Weeks. Okay. This is what I would do about the Whit Weeks situation. So, first thing is he played a lot versus USC. He played a lot of snaps. It's not as if they're not playing him. But, as I've said throughout this whole offseason, I thought Whit Weeks was going to have a very special year this year. Sometimes guys are so good, even if they're backups, they're going to have huge impacts on your team. And he's still going to play a lot. I still think you should keep Greg Penn and Harold Perkins for another game. You don't want to break up, you know, your starting linebacker duo. And there are some run-fitting things from Whit Weeks that showed up on tape last year. You know, false steps and stuff like that that are really tough to pick up on unless – you know the keys, especially with the Madhouse coach defense. So he's not a perfect linebacker. He's an explosive, playmaking, absurdly athletic linebacker. So in many ways, he's like Harold Perkins, but you know he's not the same rusher and overall elite playmaker that Harold Perkins is, right? But it is interesting, like, how good he is when he's on the field. You know, in the Mississippi State game last year, this is a true freshman that they started in week three. Week three, they started a true freshman. Normally, when U.S. coaches are making a drastic decision to start true freshmen by week three, when you had other experienced guys around, let you know that you think that guy is really talented. All right. Guys rarely just fall off cliffs as players. Some guys don't get better. They stay about the same as they are as players throughout the course of their career. But normally when true freshmen produce, you want to continue playing those guys. So the first thing is Whit Weeks played a lot. That wasn't the point of my tweet. The issue is I want my best players on the field when the game is on the line. And I felt, you know, he could have played – I wouldn't have taken him off the field in the second half. That's just what I would have done. Okay. So what do you do? What do you do? I don't know. I do think you need to roll with Greg Penn and Harold Perkins. Obviously, those roles are different, right? One's a Mike and one's the Will or whatever, the strong side, the one of the inside backers, basically. It gets all confusing with whatever. Huge difference between a strong side, weak side linebacker. I don't want the linebacker coaches to come after me. But point being, Whit Weeks has the potential of being the best player on the entire defense. I really do believe that. So we'll see how things transpire over the next couple of weeks. But he makes plays. He makes plays. That's just false. Patrick, you know that's false. Florida State, terrible, no doubt. I mean, I don't even want to get into a debate about last year's Florida State team. But that's just false. It's blatantly false. Carver says we are giving USC too much credit. Strong disagreement. Strong disagreement. If I say I'm giving them too much credit, okay, what I would think would happen is, okay. The thing I ask myself at the end of games is how many special plays did the other team make? And if they went out there and executed really difficult plays, okay, then that means they deserve to win the game or they did a lot of things to win the game, right? That's part of why the Ole Miss game drove me so crazy was did Ole Miss execute a lot of really difficult plays? They did. But we also missed 30 tackles. We made it easier on them, right? We did a lot of low football IQ things defensively that made it a lot easier for them to go out there and win the game, okay? I don't think LSU necessarily did that, right? Did they do some things where guys were wide open? Sure. But no, USC is a really good football team. USC is a really good football team. I would like to think in this first year in the Big Ten, they're going to go like 9-3 or something like that. They're a good team. We recover those fumbles, score on the first drive. Okay. The fumbles had as much to do with unlucky bounces. Like, yeah, we should have recovered those fumbles. You give USC a lot of credit for hustling towards those fumbles. But if you actually look at the flight of the ball, football's an oblong object. You never know which way it's going to bounce. Truly, you don't. Sometimes you can have a good idea where it's going to bounce, but it's tough. USC got so lucky on those fumbles, right? They literally went right back into the eyes of the players. One play that was also lucky, Ashton Stamp should have had a pick six on that screen to Branch to start the third quarter. And Stamps did what he was supposed to do. He didn't look for the ball. Rarely is the ball thrown that poorly. But Miller Moss actually threw the ball right to Stamps. And he went like this. He was like, man, if I would have just looked up, it would have been a pick six. Now, as great as and as much as I loved Blake Baker, the hire and how he did in the game, the final drive defensive calls were not good. You know, here's the thing that I hate when defense coordinators do this. One of the worst things you can do is in the final like minute of a game, if it is a tie game and you're on defense, you have got to be more aggressive, right? Because a field goal ends a game. A field goal ends it. So you need to play as if it's not a, like, let's say like they start on the 25-yard line. It's not a 75-yard situation, right? Any other time during the game, giving up only a field goal is a win, right? It's not as good as getting the ball back or forcing a turnover, but holding a team to a field goal, it's a win. But in the final 2 minutes of the game, allowing them to kick a last-second field goal is an L, right? That is the worst scenario. That's the worst, worst, worst scenario. In many ways, you prefer them to score a touchdown pretty quickly so you can get the ball back, and you go score and have a chance to go for two in the win. But on the very first play, Blake Baker had a three-man rush and you know, sunk Brayden Swenson back into coverage. And they're able to nickel and dime us all the way down the field. So I thought the defensive calls on that drive weren't the absolute best. Let's go here. It's been a big point of debate. Just because our offensive line has several high draft picks doesn't mean they are a great unit. We have to be able to run the ball. And honestly, they haven't been great at run blocking. Okay. Yeah, our run blocking hasn't been the best. I'd be the first to admit that. But at the same time, you know, they're able to really key in on what we're doing. I think you need to, if you're going to run, I think the best thing you can do is running the football is spreading guys out. Okay. Branch was wide open during our last field goal of the game. Yeah, he was. I don't think it was a field goal, though. I mean, y'all scored the touchdown on the drive. Key in how predictable play calling. Yeah, it's predictable play calling and also predictable play sequencing. Okay. One of my favorite college football offenses of all time. All right. And I'm taking out my 2019 LSU bias, all right, was last year's Washington's offense. They were the perfect college football offense. Now, notice I didn't say they were the best, but they were perfect. They had a really creative play caller. They had a really creative offensive-minded head coach, and that's why I thought Alabama made the right hire. I do think the Ryan Grubb loss will be bigger. We'll see how that actually plays out during the course of the season, but what they did offensively was so unfreaking believably creative. And, you know, I love Tennessee's offense. I would never want to commit to that, though. That's just not how I would do it, but I love their offense. I love Lane's offense as well. But last year's Washington's offense was a perfect mix of offensive verticality, physical run game, lots of tight end leaks and misdirection. They were the perfect, perfect offense. And one thing that they did a really good job of was on clear running down situations, they would do the opposite of what you think that they were going to do. All right. And I feel like doing a film study for the LSU channel on that, because I think their version of an offense would fit in well with what we want to do. Right. And there was a play call that they did versus Oregon with the game on the line last year in the Pac-12 championship game, where it was a very creative, like tight end kind of leak. And I think that would actually fit in really well with what LSU wants to do. So, you know, their run calls were really good. Like Dylan Johnson is not some spectacular running back, but he was just a good downhill runner, and their run game was very fun. Their offensive line was also very, very, very elite. And, you know, when I would watch him, I was like, man, that's a creative way to actually run the football. And I don't feel that way when I watch LSU, right? It's their run game and their run blocking is always very clunky, okay? Now, something else I would say about USC, and there was a lot of similarity. Actually, LSU and USC were identical teams going into this game. Like, literally, every last storyline about both teams were identical outside of USC joining a new conference. Obviously, there were some slight differences. But USC was so high on their defensive coaching hires. Like, so unfreaking believably high. Okay? The biggest difference, though, in the game between the two of them was the experience of the offensive play caller. That was the biggest difference. All right. So, you know, I know everyone's going to pile on Joe Sloan. That was the hire that Brian Kelly had to make. I would have made that hire as well. But hopefully it does end up paying off in the long run. It does. And I think it will. Okay. Now, here's what we're going to do. Next $20 super chat. You get my favorite Trayvon Darrell card. There's only 99 of these in existence. Okay. Now, why Trayvon Darrell? Why tonight? Why do I want to give out my favorite Trayvon Darrell card? Who I loved. Trayvon Darrell, like me, was a grinder. Trayvon Darrell really had to earn his keep. Okay. We need another wide receiver to step up. We do. And the funny thing about it is Trayvon Darrell's career path is actually very similar to Kyren Lacy. Now, Kyren Lacy is way better than Trayvon Darrell. But Trayvon, to start his career, was kind of like a three-ish kind of guy behind Odell and Jarvis, and then he eventually became the guy. who is going to be the next guy for LSU? All right. I thought Aaron Anderson played good. Statistically, he was good. I don't think he necessarily did anything special. I think Xavier Thomas should play more. I do. I thought CJ Daniels was fine. We missed him a few times. But who is going to step up? Right? You know, I do think they miss Chris Hilton. I really do think so. But I don't think that's enough to say that that was the difference. So who's going to be the Trayvon Dorall? Because Kyron Lacy and Trayvon Dorall, Kyron became the number three guy last year and started getting better and better. Now he's the number one. Same thing with Dorall, except once again, he's not as good as Kyron, and Anthony Jennings was throwing them the football. So there you go. Next $20 super chat gets a Trayvon Dorall card in the mail. And I've got to ship a bunch of stuff out tonight. So Julie says, so honestly, can we beat Ole Miss? All right. It's a very good super chat. Okay. So I'll pull up LSU schedule. The first thing we need to worry about, though, is winning all these games before Ole Miss. Now, there is a big benefit of LSU playing a difficult season opener versus USC is they now get what should be the easiest schedule in the SEC over the next 4 weeks. Two non-Power 5 teams, South Carolina, who almost got beat by Old Dominion, and UCLA, who's terrible under a first-year coach, and they have to fly cross-country to go to Tiger Stadium. So everything sets up really nicely for LSU over the next 4 weeks. So that's part of why Julie is trying to, you know, jump ahead, even though we don't play Ole Miss until over a month from now. LSU very easily could beat Ole Miss. First off, it's where it is on the schedule. Ole Miss, this will be the seventh game in 7 weeks when they have to play LSU. LSU gets a bye week. So LSU is really going to have 3 weeks to prepare for Ole Miss, right? They play South Alabama, which will be a cupcake, then bye week, and then they'll play Ole Miss, okay? We really don't know what Ole Miss is. They really haven't played anyone yet. Most of the teams in the SEC haven't, but we know they're going to be good. Ole Miss very well could be favored in that game. I don't think they will be, even if they're undefeated, and let's say LSU wins the next 4 weeks. LSU could close 2.5 3-point favorites. LSU can win that game. In fact, I do think LSU will win that game. That's not the must-win game for Ole Miss on their schedule either. Marco says, you beat Ole Piss, you're in the playoff. That's not true. Okay? That's not true. I was going to play more of the Brian Kelly press conference. I might still do it, but chat's lit tonight. Let's see. Lots of Venmos coming in. I appreciate that. Let's go to Boris. Boris has really supported me. Let's show some love for the kicker making a stud tackle. That was probably the most impressive play of the entire game. I'm serious. A kicker head-to-head versus the best return man in the game. And not only did he bring him down, normally if you're a kicker in that situation, we just need you to slow him down. No, he didn't just bring him down. There wasn't a player all night for either team that had a better form tackle than Aaron Burrell on a kickoff return on his heels. And the funniest thing, if you actually go and watch the play, when Branch tried to cut back, Burrell was like steady. Like he wasn't bobbing and weaving. That was the play of the game. But Boris, LSU special teams was really good. It was really good. Oschendorf, I think, was pretty solid. Kickoff return was really good. If Xavion could make that one guy miss, that was more so just a really good play. That's a touchdown. That was a ridiculous play by USC. Now, field goal kicking was really good. The snapping from Slade Roy, I know I'm biased, Slade's a friend of the channel, was really good. So Bob Diaco, Slade Nagel, they deserve a lot of credit. But the truth is, Bob Diaco does a lot of the special teams. And a lot of analysts do a lot of stuff on special teams as well. One thing I'll say, and I brought this up earlier on Blake's show, I sat behind the LSU bench, and sometimes when I go to a game, I don't focus on the game. I focus on other things on the sideline, stuff that you can't see in any camera angle because no one's actually filming that stuff. And Bob Diaco is in the middle of everything, right? That guy has a lot of just good vibes and energy. Okay. Once again, I'm not in between those headsets. Maybe Bob Diaco just sucks. I'll probably get a text later from someone who's in the building saying, hey, you're overrating Bob. But that's okay. It just seems like he's good energy. And I did get a message from a player saying that he does like Diaco. And this is an offensive guy. Let's go here. Let's go to Donovan. What do we think about Brian Kelly wanting Shelton Sampson more involved? The Tigers look good as usual. We'll get better through the season. 10-2 is still possible. Let's start with the back. What is the most likely scenario for LSU at this point? Well, the truth is, if they would have beaten USC, the likelihood of them being in the college football playoff would be very high. It honestly would be very high. Because look, once again, we go back to the schedule. If you would have beaten USC, how many teams on the schedule would LSU would have been favored against the rest of the way? Well, with A&M looking the way that they did, it might have been every single game left on the schedule. So let's just say you lose two of those games as a favorite. You would be 10-2 and you would be in the playoff. But 10-2 very much is still possible. More than likely, though, LSU is going to be 8-4 or 9-3. They're not going to be 7-5. They're not. They play too well. Unless some mutiny happens on Sunday, they play too well for them to not be at least 8-4. The most likely scenario, though, is 9-3. Now, is there a game that LSU could lose on this schedule the rest of the way that they have no business losing? Oh, we have a really good comedian in the chat. I think I see Kyle Kordsmeyer in here. Kordsmeyer. I've done Kyle, I think we did 3 or 4 shows together. Kyle's worked with some pretty big names in the industry. I think I saw him in here. Let's see. Former long snapper. There he is. Kyle's a really funny guy. Check him out. Yeah, there are some games that LSU can lose that they have no business losing. Florida's one of them. Florida's definitely one of them. But they might have an interim then. I think most would say, left on the schedule though, LSU has 4 losable games. Ole Miss, Alabama, Oklahoma, Texas A&M. Four more losable games. The likelihood that you win all 4 of those is very unlikely. You would like to think that they would go 3-1 in those games, especially considering of those 4, 3 of them are at home, 2 of which come off a bye week, and the other, the team has to play Alabama the week before. But college football is weird. LSU can lose a game that they aren't supposed to lose to. And I think the team that really will give them issues is Arkansas. Okay? Dual threat quarterback. Probably, outside of Jalen Milroe, the fastest quarterback that LSU has to play the rest of the season in Taylen Green. Good offensive players, good tight ends, good play caller that will have 2 weeks to prepare for you. Bobby Petrino has always coached really well versus LSU. For whatever reason, including last year, with a backup quarterback and no Evan Stewart quitting the team at the last second. And A&M really took it to us for a good portion of the game, but we had Jaden Daniels and we had a Heisman win. Arkansas is a game that LSU very much could lose. it's going to be their Super Bowl. Sam Pittman's going to be on a very hot seat, so he'll be fighting for his job. He'll have 2 weeks to prepare. So there's still games on the schedule that LSU can go out and lose. There still is. The thing, though, that really helps LSU in this instance is Brian Kelly just doesn't lose to teams that he's not supposed to lose to. It just doesn't happen. Every team, for the most part, that he's lost to since he's been at LSU has been good teams, right? LSU has not lost to bad teams. Now, they've come close, but Brian Kelly just does not lose to bad teams. So that's something else that's going in LSU's favor over the next 4 weeks. Okay? Yeah, so Donovan says define losable because I don't think A&M, Bama, or Oklahoma looked all that impressive against their cupcakes. Yeah, but they're losable, right? They have as much talent as you do. They have really good coaches. So, yeah, all three of those games are losable. Okay? Yeah, I know my Weegman prediction is not looking good. That's probably going to be a take that will stay with me for the rest of my career, but I'm not ready to jump ship yet. I'm not. He might not be the best fit for that system, though. We'll see what happens. Let's see here. Glenn freaking Dorsey was at the game. Patrick Peterson, Michael Brocker, Stephen Ridley, Jaden Daniels, and they all had to witness that. It's unacceptable. When the legends show up, we need to win. Let's go to Rick. Chances of getting in playoff now is stated at 6%. I'll take it. Okay. Let's go to Paul. The bunch formation that LSU continues to run is not helping out their running game. It just gives too many people in the box. All right. So let's talk about bunch. Let's talk about bunch. You know a team that runs a crap ton of bunch formations is the San Francisco 49ers. They are one of the tightest formations in all of football. All right. What they do out of it, though, the reason why they bring everyone so tight is to increase the amount of space out wide. All right. And they're able to run a lot of things out wide, and they base their offense out of a play called outside zone. It's the bedrock of a Shanahan offense, right? An outside zone is basically stretch left or stretch right, okay? The issue I have with running these bunch formations is this is why I actually brought up the under center stuff. Bunch, I think, works better if you're under center. I do. I really do think so. I don't like doing it out of shotgun for a few reasons, right? And once again, I don't feel like I'm smart enough and I'm not a play caller. I wish I was. I don't think I'm smart enough to fully explain why I don't like bunch in shotgun. But part of it is it does increase the amount of things that the defense can do out of it. It also increases the amount of traffic close to the line of scrimmage, right? It's part of why Tennessee does the exact opposite. They are by far, at any level of football, the widest split team in all the land, right? Where they put their guys, even in the boundary at times, outside the numbers, right? It's to create big pockets of space in the intermediate of the defense, right? And they just destroy teams with it. And if you want to add players to the box, they'll throw it. If you don't want to add players to the box, they'll run it, right, to give you numbers. So why I don't like bunch out of shotgun is because it does make life harder on your offensive line. It does. One thing I do see, though, is teams that do run a lot of these bunch kind of sets is they use a lot of pre-snap motion, which LSU does. But still, it's one of those things, right? Yeah, Devin, I appreciate that, man. It is clunky. Let's go to LaDavion Spencer. I love that name. Welcome to the channel. I get you don't know the specific rules of plays, but if you watch the same type of plays and concepts, and if they most likely have a pull for Nuss QB, then Nuss just isn't pulling. Yeah, it's weird. It's really, really, really weird, okay, with the pull reads and all of that. Garrett Nussmeier does need to run some. I do believe that. I think it would help out LSU greatly. Now, what I want to do is I want to go on ahead and play a few more clips from this Brian Kelly press conference because there was something else I wanted to get to today. I might have saved it for – I was going to save it for tomorrow. We're going to get into it today. Here's Ryan Kelly at the podium from earlier today. I want you to really listen closely on this next clip.
Hey, Coach, maybe just a quick injury report, one, and then two, just how do you feel like the defensive tackles, you know, held up in game one? That was obviously a big talking point coming into the season.
Well, the only disappointing news is Princeton Malbrew looks to have a serious knee injury. We're going to do a little bit more imaging on that today, but the initial imaging was not good, and so I think we'll have further. Owen would get to me here when I'm done with this press conference, but it was not good for a knee injury that happened on the kickoff that was returned after the penalty, which we've sent in to take a look at because it was a what we thought was an egregious block in the back. That would be one injury. You know, Kyle Parker, as you know, did not play very much. I think he, you know, he had a UCL, which is, I guess, the ulnar nerve, looks to have been an injury that he's going to come back from, but we just don't know how quickly. So we would consider him right now doubtful for this weekend, but we'll see how that goes. Those were the most significant injuries. I think everything else is, probable in terms of we've got some bumps and bruises that will show up on the injury report tomorrow, but nothing that would exclude them for the game.
Hey, Coach. After the game, you said essentially that Miller Moss, I guess, outplayed Garrett Nussmeier.
That's not what I said. I said that Garrett Nussmeier played pretty good, but Moss made some more plays.
So
at the end,
yes. So why do you believe that Moss?
Because he won.
Took an extra.
They won. Okay. The winner of the game versus the guy that didn't win. So my comments were not to disparage Garrett Nussmeier. I just gave you his numbers. He was 30 for 39 for 300 yards and two touchdowns. My comments after the game were, how do you think Nussmeier played? I said, he played pretty good, but the other kid played pretty good too, and they won the game. So this had nothing to do with Garrett Nussmeier not playing well. I think his numbers spoke for themselves. There's a couple of plays he left out there that he'd like back, and I'm sure there were a couple of plays that Moss left out there that he'd like back. You know, he had, I think, two or three balls that were batted down that could have very easily been interceptions. I thought the kid played well, but our guy played very well either. So whatever my comments were, they were not intended in any way to disparage a guy that went 30 for 39 for 308 yards.
And I did want to ask about the running game. Has there been any thought about, you know, maybe even creating a little bit more, I guess, diversity in the way you run the ball, maybe running under center or just creating a little bit more of a diverse scheme?
What would you like us to do? What, I'm just asking. We run counter. We run tackle pull. I think what you're really getting to is we have to be more efficient with our running game. And I don't know that it's a particular play, Koki, as much as where I sit and what I want is when it's third down and everybody knows you want to run it, let's be creative in running the football, but let's execute at a high level. And we didn't execute at the level we're capable of executing. Our O-line knows that, but you know, we got to put our players in a good position. This is not just on our players. This is on coaching as well. But I don't know that it's a particular scheme as much as it is. We've got to make sure that we're putting our guys in a good position. You know, we can't be predictable. And I think that that's probably more than anything else what we got to make sure of, because we've got every running play under the sun. You know, whether we're running pull, whether we're running inside zone, outside zone, counter, you know, toss to the outside. We ran all of those plays. We just have to be better when our best is needed in those tough situations. And we weren't in some instances, and we've got to be better.
Hey, Coach Kelly, I know it's a long way from
Few things. I didn't take too much about the Miller Moss thing. I saw when it got tweeted out and got passed around, and the clip, it was an awkward answer after the game, but Gary Nutsmeyer was really good, as was Miller Moss. And if anybody had watched him, you would know that they both would have been good in this game. The injuries, the Malbury injury should have never happened, but it is what it is at this point. I wanted to play the injury clip, though, because the thing that really sucks about, you know, these last couple of seasons is mostly LSU has had good injury luck, right? And they continue to mostly have good injury luck, right? A lot of their best players have not gotten hurt. So we need to take advantage of this, right? We really, really, really do. And the last thing is the run sequencing. I thought Koki Riley did a good job asking a very difficult question. And Brian Kelly's right. He's like, hey, we got all these different run plays. But like I have said all offseason, I was very concerned when we actually handed the football off to the running backs last year. It became very predictable. Very, very, very predictable. Brought it up here, brought it up on Blake's show, brought it up earlier today with Mario Jerez and Casey Gisclair on ESPN NOLA. It was painfully predictable. Painfully. And you could see it in the A&M game. You could see it in some other games as well. And that's a coaching thing. That's a play calling sequencing thing. Well, Carter, what if our offensive line isn't this good and you overhyped them because you said this is the best offensive line you've ever seen at LSU? I still do believe it. I still think this group is very good. But you've got to do a better job of putting together a story, right? Play calling a lot of times is a lot like storytelling. Right? It's a lot like poker. Is the opponent going to bite what you are selling? Okay? Like, it's a lot like poker in many ways. Are you going to take advantage of the opportunities that are given to you? And I felt like there were some favorable pass situations where we should have passed instead we ran. And I felt like there were some running situations where I felt like we could have thrown. Let's go to Hal 1740. Miller Moss outplayed Garrett Nussmeyer during the last 8 minutes of the game. Yes, this is true. But it's not as big as one would like to think. Did Garrett Nussmeyer short arm an all-time easy throw on a rollout to Aaron Anderson? Yes. I do think it was a little bizarre, though, that Aaron Anderson took his eyes off of Garrett Nussmeier for a little bit. It was just weird. It was just a weird, weird, weird play. But Garrett Nussmeier needs to make that throw 12 times out of 10. The ball just needs to be thrown. It needs to be just put on the money. And we would have seen what Aaron could have done after the catch. He's not really that good after the catch, so we would have seen, though. We don't know what would happen. But Garrett, I mean, was for the most part really good in that fourth quarter. It didn't help, though, that the play calling wasn't that great then. It just wasn't. Now, was Miller Moss sensational in the second half of the game? Yes, in particular the fourth quarter. Now, he did make some mistakes before the final, you know, few drives. But like I said, you know, that's why, you know, this, okay, you want to, you know what shit pisses me off? And it really, really does, and I don't like the curse. But I did not know that there were so many dumb USC fans, right? There are so many dumb USC fans that are, like, in my comments saying, quit crying. When there is not a single commenter or media person out there that was more complimentary to USC going into this game than me. And in my film study, I was very much complimentary of USC. I was also very complimentary of USC on Twitter. Every social platform, there is not a single time where I've shatted on USC. And I have said plenty of times that USC did more to win the game than LSU lost it. But I did not know that USC fans, which are on a completely different coast, share a lot in common with a lot of Florida Gator fans. I did not know it. A lot of this quit crying BS. Man, I did not think that was going to happen. Now, most USC fans have been great. But it's been so much of this bullshit of, well, you're just whining and saying that this should have been a penalty or that should have been a penalty. When I felt a lot of LSU fans complaining about holding penalties that weren't holding, I've called that out. I've said 1,000 times that we should give more credit to USC fans, but it's not enough. USC fans have got to let me know. They've got to let me know that I'm wrong on everything in a 1.5-hour film study that I cut in an airport at 5 a.m. All right, the last part of it was. So to those USC fans that are trolling me and all that stuff, please, please, please go touch some grass. Please, okay? All right, please do, all right? But that's not been my interaction with 90% of USC fans, right? But at this point, I'm starting to think that some of you guys are just insane. Like you're utterly insane. I don't care if you push back on something. I said this during the film study that the PJ Woodland pass interference call is like, well, maybe my LSU fandom is sneaking in here because I'm not fully sure it's pass interference. Every USC fan has to let me know that it's pass interference. When I say in the damn thing, it's closer than most would say it's pass interference. But no, I've got to be told in the middle of an 1.5-hour film study. All right, it drives me nuts, okay? I edit, shoot, put together all of it. Now, do I have other coaches help me on some plays that is over my football skill level? Yes, all right? But in this one, it was all me cutting it, all right? If I mistakenly call Kamari Ramsey, Kamari Lassiter, who gives a damn? Who gives a flying damn? Kamari Ramsey is probably the most underrated safety that LSU has played in a very long time. But I call him Lassiter one time, calling Kamari Lassiter one time. When I even fixed it in later in the film study, people are like, "Well, how do you make that mistake? How do you make that mistake? Huh? God." But no, it's just me venting. It's just me. Most USC fans were great. I don't want to run you guys off. But damn it, dude. It drives me crazy. All right? And they'll comment 1,000 times with timestamps. Well, you're wrong about this. You're wrong about this. You're wrong about this. Never complimenting anything. It's just you're wrong on it. And that's fine. I like haters. That's fine. More play action plays and boot action. I'm with it. The issue is it's tough to run play action if you – don't ever run anything under center or you don't run anything out of pistol. But playing action can still be effective without that. You know, Tennessee does that. But, and Ole Miss as well. But play action is more effective if you do have a run game to go along with it. It's not necessary, though. And I do agree with you, Josh. It's a really good super chat. Okay? Also, I'll say it now because USC just won. 2003 LSU would have put y'all in a freaking locker. I'll say it. F it. Don't give a damn. Forget everything I said about it being 6 times out of 10. No. Marcus Spears would have thrown Reggie Bush 10 yards into the backfield on every play. I'm going to be a delusional LSU fan for like 20 minutes now. Forget all this fair BS. Okay? And it's also interesting, all right? When LSU wins, LSU does their own dances. But when USC wins, what do? They do the LSU dance from 5 years ago. 5 years ago. You would think USC in Los Angeles, California, the most diverse city we have in America. Here's the thing about USC needing to do the get the gad LSU dance. Every cheesy TikTok dancer moves to freaking LA. They do that, all that stupid bullshit. They live in LA. You can hire someone to come up with a creative dance. Hire any of these TikTok dancers. Matt Stefanina, whoever the hell it is. Whoever the hell it is. Okay? You can hire someone to come up with your own stuff. But no, we gotta. How can USC have negative aura when you had freaking Reggie Bush? No aura. No aura whatsoever. You have the most aura running back of all time. Don't have any aura. None. Negative aura. Ha, ha, ha. What you got to do to get the gat? I mean, when get the gat was done, I'm done. I'm kidding. And honestly, I'm kind of joking around a little bit. They did deserve it, and they were really good in this game. I will also say that that was an all-time great commercial. And for the most part, I actually do like USC. I do. I'm just kind of messing around. I know, DRC. I'm just being a fan for a few seconds. Okay. Yo, Gotti, please. Please, come on. Let's not do this. 04 USC beats 2019 LSU. So 04 USC, that was a team that beat Oklahoma and then Natty, I blew them out. That was a good team. That was a good team. But LSU wins with Miles Brennan at quarterback. Let's be honest. And by the way, I'm just kidding. Most USC fans have been great, though. But gosh, you don't have to. No, I don't know. I'm done. King Wing says, I kind of do hate USC. Haven't lived there for a long time. Now, here's what we're going to do. Next 10 to 15, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. We'll be live tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Central. Rent free. Tell him, coach. Come on, Yo Gotti. Do you really think that 04 USC? LSU would probably, in all seriousness, LSU would probably be favored by what, like 6.5, maybe? Walker Howard is at Ole Miss. But this is the truth. Mike, who's right about a lot of things. You win, you get to do whatever you want. That was me just bitching. It's okay. Let's go. I'm restarting the stream because I don't know the times you go live. As I wasn't a fan of your first film study I watched a week or two ago, I still think you're good and spot on for the most part. Okay. LaDavion Spencer. Okay. So whenever you catch up, feel free, LaDavion, to tell me which film study you're talking about. God, I don't know if you're a USC fan or not, but I'm guessing the Miller Moss one, maybe, or that I called Danton's lens the tender date defense, which was actually a compliment. But yeah, tell me which one you didn't like. A lot of people didn't like the one I dropped yesterday. That is funny. When you beat the team you have no business beating. I will say, USC did have business. I mean, beating us. I mean, they were good. They're a good team. But they did act like they won the freaking natty. Let's go to Pegasus. Who impressed you throat? What's on your mind? I'm just kidding. And who disappointed you the most from last weekend? Yeah, so you can go to Patreon. You could see my highest graded and lowest graded player. I won't say who my lowest graded was, but Savion Jones was definitely the most impressive. No doubt. Okay. Now, yeah, BK's not going anywhere anytime soon. That'll do it for me. Let's shout out our top super chatters of the weekend. Shout out Jared, shout out Rick, Carvis, Harry, D. Really, Josh. Also, our Venmos, Jordan Hara. Jordan Hara with the Venmo. Julie, my good friend Samuel, TJ. I love you guys. You guys know who you are. Appreciate it big time. Also want to shout out, actually, the top super chatter was my guy Donald, who I met yesterday, and gave a very sizable donation to the channel. Really appreciate you, Donald. That goes a long way. Okay. What the heck is this? Oh. Oh, Vegas. Mm. All right. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central. We'll talk soon. It is. Pow, ow, LSU, boom. And tonight, we are doing ribeyes. Let's go. Let's go.